Happy New Year. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Why doesn't Baltimore have a first-rate public transit system? For people living in East or West Baltimore, it takes an average of an hour and a half to get to a decent job. A study at Harvard identified poor transportation options as the number one obstacle for people trying to escape poverty. In survey after survey, college kids' biggest complaint about Baltimore is the lack of good public transit. A group called Transit Choices is a coalition of businesses, community groups, and planners who are trying to coordinate a comprehensive overhaul of Baltimore's transportation system. Today, a conversation with Jimmy Rouse of Transit Choices and Klaus Philipson, an urban planner and transportation expert. What will it take to get Baltimore moving effectively, efficiently, and accessibly? Midday starts right after these headlines. Hi, everybody. Happy 2017. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to the first edition of Midday in this nation new year. Today, we turn our attention to public transportation in Baltimore City. Why is it that Baltimore, which was once a city of 950,000 people, has just one subway line instead of an entire subway system? And why doesn't that single subway line connect with the light rail? We have a streetcar museum, for example, but we don't have any streetcars. So just yesterday, New York added the 2nd Avenue subway line to its legendary matrix of subterrestrial transport. Governor Hogan said no to the Red Line in Baltimore just months into his term in favor of road projects elsewhere in the state and revamping the city's bus system. So is this the year that transit in our region will start down the path toward an effective, efficient, coordinated regional system? Well, a coalition called Transit Choices certainly hopes so. It's a group of businesses, community groups, planners, and others who are advocating for a transit system that connects subway, light rail, buses, and boats to connect people with jobs and entertainment. They think that if these different modes are improved and connected, it will transform Baltimore. Jimmy Rouse is part of the Transit Choices Coalition. Klaus Philipson is an architect, urban designer, and architectural writer. He's the president of Archplan, an architecture and urban design firm that specializes in community revitalization, adaptive reuse, historic preservation, and transportation planning. They both join me here in Studio A. Happy New Year, gentlemen. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Sure. So, Jimmy, you've been part of this town for a long time. You're the former owner of Louis Bookstore Cafe, so folks back in the day remember that. It was in the 80s and the 90s. And you've been active in a number of different causes. You have embraced this cause of transit wholeheartedly. Why? What is Transit Choices trying to accomplish?
Well, I'll start with answering why I embraced it. And that grew out of my experience at Louis. I had two experiences which drove home to me the importance of transit in the city. The first was I had 95 employees at Louis. And a lot of them came from East and West Baltimore. And they could not get to work in a reliable fashion. So we had to have a strict rule, 15 minutes late, three times, and you're out of a job.
And we should remind folks that Louis was located right near the Washington Monument
right,
on Charles Street.
Right downtown. So these people lived 10 or 20 minutes by car, but they could not get to Louis in a reliable fashion. So I ended up having to fire people who I liked, who wanted to work, simply because they could not depend on the transit system to get to work on time. That bothered me. And that's what first got me interested in transit.
And if that were the case for you in the 80s and 90s, it is probably still the case for many employers right now.
So when Horseshoe Casino came online, they called Bill Cole at BDC and said their star trainer lived in West Baltimore and couldn't get to Horseshoe Casino in a regular, in a reliable fashion. And so That was one lesson that I learned at Louis, that our transit system is not connecting people to jobs. So that's very important. The second thing I learned was in the early 80s, Schaefer put a rubber wheel trolley connecting the Inner Harbor to the Washington Monument. And immediately I noticed an uptick in business from two groups, tourists coming up to Mount Vernon and downtown office workers coming up to Louis for lunch. And then Kurt Schmoke became mayor, and he took away that trolley. And immediately those two groups declined. So I began to sense the importance of transit to economic development and retail development in the city along a route. So those two things were what drove me to start Transit Choices. The realization that our system was failing to connect people to jobs, and that transit is an important economic development tool in the city.
And Klaus Philipson, you've been writing about this, thinking about this. You've been deep into the weeds and the issues of transportation in this town for 30-plus years. Baltimore ranks 24th among 25 major cities in terms of our average transit commute time. What is the how do you rank Baltimore's transit system? I mean, right now, the first thing that people often point to, and this is something that Transit Choices is working on, and we'll talk about this as the hour proceeds, is that none of the ways of getting around are connected. It's hard to get from a bus to the light rail to the subway to the circulator to whatnot. They have all these little separate things. Is that the issue as you see it? And just in general, I mean, how would you rank Baltimore's transit operation?
Well, it is better than the reputation, I think. There is a history in Baltimore that we talk our own stuff down. But that being said, of course, it doesn't operate as optimally as it should. And part of it is what you mentioned in your introduction, that we didn't build things that other cities built, particularly European cities, but some other American cities built, and we didn't get it done. And then the other is that it's fragmented. So not only within the MTA, between light rail and buses and metro is some fragmentation, but also between what the MTA offers, what the city offers with the term city circulator, and then the harbor connector on as a boat, and then all the private shuttles. So these disconnects that are put in front of people as a transportation system, or should be as a transportation system, are now put in front of people as fragments. And instead of having one ticket that you could buy where you could use all the different modes in an integrated fashion with that one ticket, you have to buy for each a separate, or they all have their own information systems and they all have their own technology, and they are operating in silos to some large extent. So that's the one thing. But to keep the facts, I mean, facts is always better than just opinions. The Baltimore, the metro region, puts some over 320,000 people on transit every day. And the Baltimore region puts, in terms of passenger miles of transit offered, has a ranking of number 10 in the country. Also, in size as a metro region, it is only number 19 or 20. So we are twice as good as the average, and we are in terms of what we have on offered. And that's often forgotten. So we have 250,000 people on buses every day. So that is the largest portion of that, with 800 buses deployed. So when you compare that, we are better than San Diego or Minneapolis or Houston. I mean, some of these metro regions are much larger than we are. We are better than Atlanta, which is twice as large in terms of population.
So, in terms of miles of transit, public transit that are available?
Yes.
I mean, Atlanta has the MARTA system, for example.
Yeah, right. But we offer nearly about the same amount of transit, a little more, with half the population. So things are not as bad as people always say. There is no city in America where the population says, oh, our transit system is great. They are always hated. The transit providers are always hated because most cities rely mostly on bus, and bus is a fundamentally not super reliable system. Now, there are lots of cities that are trying to make, or transit agencies that are trying to make their bus system better, and we'll probably talk about that in a few minutes. But the Transit Choices, it was founded, and I joined this immediately when Jimmy Rouse talked to me. I thought, wow, this is a really good group, because it was the coalition of so many folks that before were sitting on the sidelines and were just saying, oh, our transit system is bad. And now one of the things is what's on the ground, but the other thing is how are people engaged with the system and how many people really care about it. And that's another thing. So to make critics to be proponents that actually constructively work on change is an important element.
Klaus Philipson is an urban planner and transportation expert. He's here in the studio along with Jimmy Rouse, the founder of Transit Choices, one of the groups of folks who are trying to improve the transit situation here in Baltimore. So, Jimmy, another group called the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance did a sort of scorecard of the public transit in Baltimore, taking in a number of different factors, and they rated it a D. They gave it a pretty low grade. So they may be considerably more pessimistic about it than Klaus is, for example. But what is the aspiration for Transit Choices? What are you trying to do with your group that you've coalesced with people from the community and businesses and folks like Klaus who are expert at planning?
So, first of all, let's look at why we're doing what we're doing. In 2015, Harvard University did a study of patterns of poverty in America, and they determined that the number one obstacle for people trying to get out of poverty was not crime, not poor education, but poor transit connections to job opportunities, education, healthcare, healthy food. So that's fact number one. Fact number two is the Opportunity Collaborative, which was a project of the Baltimore Metropolitan Council, where all transit dollars come through the Baltimore Transit, all federal transit dollars come through the Baltimore Metropolitan Council. And they did a study of Baltimore, and they determined that the average commute of somebody living in East and West Baltimore to a living wage job was over 90 minutes one way, and that's if your bus showed up. Because as I began to dig into this, the MTA for decades has had a policy of pulling buses unannounced because of maintenance issues and driver absenteeism. They don't have enough buses on any given day to run all the routes. So you can be standing there waiting for your bus to get to work, and the bus doesn't show up. And then the next one that comes could be overcrowded and pass you by. You cannot get to a job in that fashion. So that's number two. The fact number three is the millennial generation. Collegetown does a survey each year of outgoing seniors from Baltimore area colleges. For 12 years running, those people have said the number one problem with Baltimore is poor public transit. So that millennial generation, they're the future job creators.
And these are kids, for example, who are going to Towson or Goucher or Loyola or Notre Dame. I mean, so even just getting from North Baltimore or Towson into the city is a challenge for them.
Right. Or even going from Hopkins to downtown. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a bus, their own little bus system as a result of the lack of public transit. So the millennials want to live in a city where they don't have to own a car, for both economic and environmental reasons. So we're losing large numbers of that demographic because we don't have a system where we don't have a public transit system where they can live in Baltimore without a car. And so it's urgent.
And do we know, I mean, from that survey, maybe we don't, but do we know, for example, that they're moving to Boston or they're moving to Philadelphia to take SEPTA?
They're moving to cities where they can live without a car.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to take a little break, and we will have much, much more with Jimmy Rouse and Klaus Philipson about the issue of transportation. We'd love to hear what you think about the situation and the future of Baltimore City Transit. You can give us a call here at midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. If you want to drop us a tweet, our handle is @MiddayTomHall. Lots more on Baltimore Transit when we come back from a break. Stick around. And Happy New Year again, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday in this first edition of the program in 2017. By the way, coming up tomorrow, Dr. Sherry Parks will join me for the first edition of Culture Connections in this new year. Tomorrow, we'll talk about optimism. So you can make the argument that from the founding of the Republic, Americans have been hardwired to look to the future and that we're usually confident that the future will be better than the past. Well, with the presidency of Donald Trump beginning in 3 weeks, will the country enter this new year optimistically? Sherry Parks ponders what hope looks like in the age of Trump. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, we're talking transportation. The artist and activist Jimmy Rouse is with Transit Choices. He founded this group. It's a coalition of businesses, community groups, and planners who are advocating for coordinated and more effective public transit here in Baltimore. He's here in Studio A along with Klaus Philipson, the president of Archplan, an architecture and urban design firm with a focus on community revitalization, adaptive reuse, historic preservation, and transportation planning. Let us know what you think about the situation in Baltimore in terms of public transit. Our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our Twitter handle, at Midday Tom Hall, and our email, midday@wypr.org. So, Klaus Philipson, what are the, you're a student of this stuff. What are the cities we should be looking to address the problems we have? You talked about optimization, you know, making optimal use of this network that we do have. Are there particular cities that pop out to you as places that could serve as paradigms?
Well, there are the legacy cities that have had a good transportation system, like Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and had never dismantled their streetcar system. In many ways, they're not really comparable with us because...
Yeah, I mean, those were built a long time ago in a different era.
There are some new cities or cities that have changed their transportation philosophy entirely. And, I mean, the best known example of that is Portland and Oregon, and then there is Denver. And they built a transit system more or less from scratch, and they put their mind to it and they got it done. And these cities thrive with transit. I mean, as Jimmy said, you can't have a thriving city without a thriving transportation system. And so Baltimore is falling further and further behind because we have failed to build new things. The last light rail was built in 92, and then the Red Line, of course, was canceled, which is very unfortunate. We should still get it one day. I'm hopeful that we can maintain the option to build it. This is a fully designed system that would fill in a linkage between the existing elements so that it would become more of a system.
You don't think, because you were involved in helping to plan the Red Line, you don't think at this point, on the 2nd of January 2017, 3 years after the governor canceled the program, you don't think that it's dead? I mean, most people would say Red Line's over, we got to move on, we got to look to the next thing.
Well, obviously, right now we wouldn't get it in the next few years, but it is. I have been around the block enough to know that some projects can be revived after years when they were seemingly dead, when the political constellations change. And there is a lot of understanding in the Baltimore region right now that our city does need good transportation in order to be competitive. The new mayor understands this. The industry and the business community understands it, and the people that ride transit, they understand it for a long time because they're suffering in a system that is performing, very underperforming. And so for thriving, this is interesting because cities have for a long time looked at transportation and transit as a means of reducing congestion. So it was just, or before that, it was all about cars, so it was making everything flow. Then it became mobility and, okay, let's move people but be neutral in mode. And so then transit came into the picture. And now we are talking about transit really as an economic development tool, as an equity tool, as environmental justice tool, as access to jobs tool. So this is a much more comprehensive view. And in transit has health benefits, has all kinds of benefits that were previously not really in the discussion when we always just talked about congestion avoidance. So with that, now our charge here in Baltimore is to make sure, and that's what Transit Choices does, that the things that are on the ground and that the folks that are providing services, that they make this much better in terms of using what we got in a better way. And then one day, hopefully, we'll get the red line back.
So let's talk to me then about the kinds of things you're hoping to do. I mean, Klaus mentioned the equity dimension of this. In New York and D.C., the ridership of their public transit, the subway and the metro, reflects a diverse population from people from all income groups. Here in Baltimore, they say that the income difference, the median income difference of people riding the subway in Manhattan and Brooklyn and Queens is like 2-4%. Here in Baltimore, the income gap is 35%. So most of the people, many of the people riding public transit are in economically disadvantaged situations, and this is really going to help them more than it's going to help, a wealthier sector of the population.
Well, we have 35% of the city doesn't own cars because they can't afford to, and they're totally dependent on public transit to get around. Because we've had a dysfunctional system, we have very few people who choose to ride the bus. It's unreliable, and therefore it's not a system where people choose to use it. What we do is have to create a system that's reliable and that people want to ride, as well as the people that need to ride it. It gets them to work on time in a reliable fashion. So Hogan took away the red line. He said, Baltimore's a bus town. Klaus said we have over 300,000 riders per day on our bus system. We need to make that system work. And Baltimore Link, which is Hogan's counterproposal to the Red Line, is an attempt to do that. And the MTA is working very hard right now. Every bus line in this city is going to change in the summer of 2017. That's next year. And the rationale behind it is great. Have fast and frequent core routes, have feeder routes coming into those routes. So they're reorganizing the bus system along very rational lines. What our job is as citizens of Baltimore, not just Transit Choices, what our job is as citizens is to make sure that this system lives up to their stated goals. Does it connect you to a job? Is it reliable? We need to work with the MTA. There's a very good team at the MTA right now, young, bright people who are working very hard to make this system good. They realize that it's not just a one-time rollout in the summer of 2017. It comes out and it's finished. It's organic. We need to
And there's a hard deadline. It's June 16th, the weekend of June 16th and 17th.
Right.
Coming up, it's 6 months from now.
Right. And the reason for that is because they got to do it in the summer in order to get the kinks out. So when people, we have 27,000 students ride the MTA every day. So it has to be ready to go by September.
And Transit Choices advocates and supports Baltimore Link, Governor Hogan's proposal for revamping the bus system here in Baltimore.
What we're trying to do is work with the MTA to make this system the best it can possibly be. One thing we're trying to assess is the amount of money that Governor Hogan's pledged to this system enough to actually make it effective? If we find that it's not, we're going to go to the governor and say, look, you're falling short here. But the goal is to make it effective, and it can be done. We can have an effective, reliable bus system, and that would be huge in changing the transit dynamic of this city.
Jimmy Rouse from Transit Choices joins me in the studio along with Klaus Philipson, an urban planner and transportation expert. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Let's go to the phone. Sally in Baltimore. Happy New Year, and welcome to Midday.
Well, thank you, and thanks for taking my call here. I live in the city, and I work in the city, and I worked at a job for 5.5 years where I had to take the bus back and forth every day, and it was terrible. It was awful. It was one of the worst parts of my day, and part of it was because I could never be sure I'd get on a bus because there were students. Whoever was just talking said there are 27,000 students who ride the buses every day. And they were packing the buses so that I could no longer get to my job. And I ended up having to change bus stops and leave so that I would get to work an hour early to make up for all the buses that were going to pass me by. And then just be at work for an hour, maybe. So it didn't happen every day, but in order to make sure that I was never late for work, I had to leave so that I would probably get there an hour early and then just sit at work and do something else until, you know, it was time to punch in. But the buses would pass me by. They would get so packed up with students, they'd pack them all in the aisles up to the front door. You had to elbow your way out and not even be sure you could get to the door by the time your stop came. It was awful. It was really awful. Uh-huh. And I am.
And I'm interested, Sally, you said that you had to take the bus. Does that mean you had to take the bus because you don't own a car? Or
exactly. I didn't have a car.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't working for several years, and then when I got a job, the only way I could get there was to take the bus.
Uh-huh. Klaus Philipson, well, thank you for your call, Sally. Klaus, I mean, obviously they'll account for students as part of the ridership on these buses if they are able to optimize it under Baltimore Link. What's your take on Baltimore Link, Governor Hogan's proposal?
Sally's description describes what is wrong with the current deployment and use of the bus system. Buses are full with and without students oftentimes and bypass the stops where the people think the next bus is due now and they could get on and then they can't get on. We have bus lines that have up to 19,000 riders a day, and that can't be done with simply a bus. So, you know, that's where I think that the link system is promising, but it does not answer all the questions because you can't run a city like Baltimore with just buses. And so rail needs to support these heavy trunk lines, and or the buses would have to come every 3 minutes, and that's also not in the link plan. So there are capacity issues that will be very interesting to see whether they will be resolved with link. And the students is another issue. So many cities have students running on the transportation system. It doesn't make sense to have a full-fledged public transit system.
It used to be that they rode for free. That's no longer
they have
the case.
They have reduced the S-passes, there is currently actually a conflict between those who are interested in education and those in transit that the S-Pass duration was shortened from 8 o'clock in the evening to 6 o'clock. There will be a hearing.
And that's a problem for people who are involved in after-school activities.
Right. That causes other problems. So to play the various constituents of transit out against each other doesn't make any sense. And one has to have enough buses and enough service so that both parties can get to their destination.
Melissa sends us a tweet saying that transit is also a huge issue for education. Kids rely on unreliable MTA buses for school and community college. So, Sally, in Baltimore, you know, there are kids who have the same concerns that you do. You had a tough time getting to your job, and they have a tough time getting to school. Anikwenze Ogbue says, how can we engage black and brown communities that lack bike facilities? They gain by having more options. We need equity. Bike paths and bike facilities and bike share is part of the plan for, as you say, this comprehensive system, is it not, Jimmy?
So what do we need to do? Baltimore has subway, it has light rail, it has buses, it has a circulator, it has water taxi, and it has pedestrian. It has all these different modes. We need to integrate these modes into a vision of what an effective transit system would be. And we can do that. And the elements are beginning to take shape. It's already beginning to happen. Under Armour just bought the water taxi. And their goal is to make it all weather, all season, serving both commuters and tourists, take it around to the Middle Branch so it serves Fort Covington and Cherry Hill. You know, this the water taxi could be a major part of Baltimore's transit system. It can get people from Federal Hill to jobs at Inner Harbor East and vice versa.
Is it a good idea for a private company like Under Armour to be running one of the modalities of a transit
system? So everybody talks about public-private partnerships as being an ideal way to increase transit. And in fact, our original streetcar system was largely private money developed that system, developers wanting to get people out to their developments. So yes, it's great that Under Armour, we ought to welcome this kind of public-private partnership. It's part of the solution of how we get a great transit system.
It's midday on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. Klaus Philipson is with me along with Jimmy Rouse. We're talking about transportation. Let's go to the phones again. Jancy in Mount Vernon, welcome to the show. Thanks for your call.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I have a minor, well, it's major to some people, correction of your, not Jenny, but your other guest.
Klaus.
There is a system of using a pass, a day pass. The system is not well connected, but if you get a day pass on a bus, you can use that on the light rail where you may not be checked for it, but you can use it. And also to get into the subway, you can use that same pass. So if you get a day pass, you can use all the transit systems all day long for that one price, depending on your age. Senior citizens get more of a discount.
Yeah, but Klaus, there are ways that well, thank you for your call, Jancy.
This is correct. The day pass can be used on the three modes. It cannot be used on the MARC train. And I was talking about across all transit systems. There are regional compacts in other cities, particularly in Europe, where one ticket gets you on all the providers' transit systems in the entire region. And so ultimately, it would be necessary to have a pass that would work on MARC, and it would work, I mean, like the charm card works even between WMATA and here, but it doesn't work on the MARC train. So you can take a bus with the charm card to the MARC train, then you buy a separate ticket, and then in Washington you can use it again. So those kinds of things need to be overcome. And then ultimately you should be able to use that on the water taxi too. And on Ride-On and all these other regional transit systems that are springing up left and right.
Klaus Philipson is an urban planner and architect who has long been involved with transportation issues here in Baltimore. Jimmy Rouse is with Transit Choices, a coalition working to coordinate a plan for better and more accessible public transportation. We're going to have more on how best to make Baltimore move more effectively when we come back from a quick break. You are welcome to join us at 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So before we take that break, on Mondays here on Midday, it is our practice to read the names of the people who lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. We get their names from Ellen Worthing, who's been compiling a list of Baltimore homicide victims for the past 15 years, and we also consult the Baltimore Sun's list of homicides, which they've been compiling since 2007. In 2016, according to the Sun, 318 people, 318 people were victims of a homicide in our city. More than 900 people were victims of non-fatal shootings. The following people were the victims of a homicide in Baltimore City between the week before Christmas until last Friday. Anthony LaSalle Brown, age 22, an unidentified man who was 68 years old. Luke Beeput, age 23. William Bryson, age 20. Tony Williams, age 21. Tajay Barnes, age 21. Terry Griffin, age 41. James Johnson Sr., age 59. Carl Stepik, age 60. Juan Portillo, age 20. And Quanas Brandon, who was only 20 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. And Happy New Year again. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about making public transportation more effective, more efficient, and more accessible in Baltimore. My guests are Jimmy Rouse, who's with a coalition of groups working to design a coordinated system of public transit here in Baltimore. That group is called Transit Choices. Klaus Philipson joins us as well. He's an architect, an urban designer, and architectural writer. He's the president of ArchPlan, a firm that specializes in community revitalization, adaptive reuse, historic preservation, and transportation planning. You are welcome to be part of the conversation here on Midday. 410-662-8780 is our number. Midday at WIPR.org is how you can send us an email. If you want to drop us a tweet, our handle is at Midday Tom Hall. We got a whole bunch of calls that are waiting, and I'll do my best to get to as many as we can. Jimmy, here's an email from Joe, who says the Baltimore Link will only work with the requisite financing. Many of the other systems, like Houston, that use this concept, did so after rapid light rail transit, like the Red Line, came into service and freed up resources. I mean, the budget for Governor Hogan's Baltimore Link plan is about $164 million, if I'm not mistaken.
$135 million over 6 years.
$135 over 6 years. Is that going to be enough? Is that going to be able to coordinate this stuff and make the improvements
that
are needed?
That's a question that we're working on answering now. We're working with the MTA and trying to get an answer out of them. Do they need more money in order to really make the system work? So far, they think that it's enough, but we're not convinced of that. And we will make an independent determination, and we will appeal to the governor if we think more money is needed.
In addition to the money, Jimmy, and forgive me for interrupting, most people point, when it comes to buses, they point to the fact that the buses have to share the roads with all these cars, and that's what slows them down. That's what makes them late.
This part of Link are various improvements. There are 5.5 miles designated bus lanes that we see already on Pratt and Lombard, where the bus can move on a dedicated lane and is not impeded by the other cars. There are signal priority. There will be fewer bus stops, and there will be shorter lines. All these are supposed to make the buses run more effectively, more efficiently. I have severe doubts about the money side because, as the caller or emailer pointed out, Houston has put money into rail systems that freed up capacity on the bus side. So then, when you always operate at the edge of your capacity, and when one driver doesn't show up because he is sick, then the bus gets canceled. And when bus breaks down, the bus gets canceled. So you need reserves, and that costs money. And so we are wondering, you know, whether there is really enough money to make the system work more efficiently because the reserves are needed.
And Jimmy, you mentioned this right at the top of the show, that there's a lot of absenteeism among drivers, and there's a lot of maintenance problems that take buses out of circulation.
So we met with Paul Comfort, who heads the MTA, a week ago, and he said that he had enough buses and enough driver to be 100% reliable, to create a 100% reliable system, and they're working on that now before Baltimore Link. It's our job to make sure that they meet that goal. In addition, I mean, we want to roll out an app so that wherever you are in the city, you can consult your smartphone when the next vehicle, where it is and when it will arrive at your stop. This would make waiting for the bus a lot more pleasant if you knew that you didn't have to go out and wait a half hour in the rain. If you knew where the actual vehicle was and how soon it would get to your
stop.
And
there could be an app for the water taxi, an app for the subway, an app for the light rail, for everything.
You should be anywhere in the city, one app. You should see all your transit options and the next arrival time. So this is a goal, and we're working. MTA has agreed to work on that. It won't come out in 2017, the summer, but Paul says within 2 or 3 months that app should be ready. So that's in the works.
Lydia in Pigtown, welcome to Midday with Jimmy Rouse and Klaus Philipson.
Hi. I just moved here last year from San Francisco, and I live in Cape Town, and I wanted to share a couple observations. Cape Town is where the MTA headquarters is, I believe. And, you know, our neighborhood, when the MTA people are here, there's no parking. And then at the end of the day, the streets are fine for parking. I think that's like an interesting observation that they all drive, it seems. And also here in Cape Town, you know, there's no real quick straight shot from my house to Harbor East where I work. And it's, you know, I mostly just bike because of the inconvenience of the buses and driving and the traffic. And I was in San Francisco living there when we transitioned the BART train system, Muni bus system, and the streetcar system. They're all linked together by a Clipper card, which I think is what the Charm card is supposed to be. And it was a really easy transition. And I'm just wondering, is it possible for there to be a system like the BART train in Baltimore, where each neighborhood has their own stop? Is that feasible?
Well, I mean, you're saying actually, Klaus, there are going to be fewer bus stops now with the Baltimore Link plan. How does that improve things?
Well, the bus wouldn't stop as much, and that would improve the run times and the efficiency because, of course, once you are waiting for a bus, you want the bus to stop everywhere where you wait. But when you're on the bus, you would want the bus to run and not stop all the time. So somewhere between that, there is maybe a happy medium. It just Lydia points to other modes of transportation, too. She says she rides the bike. So Baltimore finally got to the point where we are looking at transportation as a whole entity. I mean, we still...
Yeah, transportation as opposed to transit. They're different things.
Right. So there are the cars. There are the active modes. There's walking. There's biking. And there are the private shuttles. And so we need to look at everything together. And then what's interesting in urban planning is that when you have good transit, that good transit actually changes the way how land use works. So what we have never really managed is that we put stuff where our assets are. So the State Center is an interesting discussion because around that metro stop where we have a subway stop at State Center, that we have these state office buildings and we have a sea of parking. And the plans to make better use of this area that started with a Republican governor just got stopped by this governor. And so good transit should change the way how the city allocates their stuff. And it is not just, you know, how the 90-minute commute is partly because the jobs are all way out and sprawling. So we need to get the things back and closer together. That's really part of the whole discussion.
And by the way, we're going to be talking about State Center on midday on Thursday. Let's go to David in Baltimore. David, you have a question or a comment about the bike master plan. We're talking about Lydia's commute, which often is done by bike. And Lydia, thank you for your call and welcome to town. But David, what's on your mind today here on midday?
Yes, for the past 13 years, I've commuted by bicycle from my home to work, including living in Mount Vernon and commuting from West Baltimore to Johns Hopkins Hospital at all times at night. I was excited about the bike master plan that was put online, I believe, several years ago, and the bike rollout, the shared bicycles and things of that nature. Curious what Transit Choice's view of the bike master plan is more broadly and how it fits into the larger construct of transit and in addressing some of the challenges they outlaid.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Jimmy, Bike Share is a new program that's just getting underway.
So Transit Choice has put out a brochure which takes each mode. It has five or six things that we need to do in each mode in order to transform the city's public transit. So it has one for all modes, one for rails, one for buses and circulators, one for bikes, one for water taxi, and one for pedestrian. And we make concrete suggestions about what needs to be done in each of these areas. In the bike section, we have a bike commission that was appointed under Stephanie that hopefully
former Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake.
Right, that hopefully will be continued under Catherine Pugh, that where the bike stakeholders come together each year and set out a series of goals for what should be accomplished within that year. Expanding bike share is part of that, extending the bike lane network, creating separate, physically separated lanes like you see on Maryland Avenue. That's all part of the biking master plan. And each year we should be establishing goals to work on for that year and hold the city accountable for working on them.
I read a statistic that the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance, I believe, had in their one of their publications that said that more than 900 pedestrians are hit every year by cars.
That's in our Transit
Choices. Is that
in
the Transit Choices? So that between 2011 and 2015, 946 pedestrians killed every year or hit every year by cars. Is that true?
It's amazing.
Is it that dangerous to walk around town?
Well, apparently.
Yeah. So you call for a complete streets policy. I mean, a policy that has streets that look different than obviously the streets
right.
that we have
I mean,
looking at.
30% of a city are public spaces, streets mostly. And those need to be allocated and distributed among all the purposes of a street. And one of the purposes is to live along the street. And one of the purposes is to walk. And one of them is to ride in a bus and so on. And currently, the streets are mostly organized from the 50s when Barnes was the traffic engineer in Baltimore, and it's all for cars. So we have the one-ways, we have the prohibition to park during rush hour and so on. This is all to resolve towards the car, which makes it very difficult for pedestrians to get around safely or for bicyclists. And that's why these new measures of complete streets that are really not enacted, it's just a policy at this point. So I'm very hopeful that with the new mayor, we will really, we had Sadiq Khan speak to us here. She is the former transportation commissioner from New York, who took streets and redesignated space for people to be safely and walk.
Yeah, well, back in the day, then Senator Pugh was instrumental in getting Druid Hill Park and Druid Lake Park Drive accommodated so that people could walk around the reservoir in Druid Lake Park. So she certainly has some personal experience in it. Let's try to sneak in one more phone call. Robert in Baltimore, you have a comment about the light rail for Klaus Phillipson and Jimmy Rouse. Welcome to Midday.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a lot of points about my problems with light rail. The route
just make a couple because we're running out of town.
Whenever it gets developed, it's there. It's not dynamic. It can't change according to needs. It's extremely expensive to build out the infrastructure, and it's very disruptive during that period of time. Lots of capital investment to build a light rail. It's very dangerous to pedestrians and other forms of traffic. Commercial districts and retail districts suffer. Look at Howard Street. It's a disaster.
Okay, Robert, well, I got to cut you off because we're running out of time. But, Jimmy, just real quick as we finish up here, is light rail and above ground rail, obviously it's part of this plan, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, every major city that has good transit has a rail system, a bus system, a circulator system, and we can have a water taxi system. We can have biking. We can work with pedestrians. We need to envision all these things together.
Got to think holistic.
And we need to work to implement it. Transit Choices is not just envisioning. It's working to implement improvements in each mode.
Jimmy Rouse is a member of Transit Choices, a coalition of businesses, community groups, and planners. They're working to imagine, as Jimmy has just said, to imagine and coordinate a new transit system in Baltimore. Klaus Phillipson has joined us as well. He's an architect and urban planner. We've got a link to the Transit Choices website at our website, wypr.org/midday. That'll do it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks. As we begin the new year, a conversation about the American propensity for optimism and how that propensity may play out in this new year, given the divisiveness of the presidential campaign. Dr. Sherry Parks joins me at noon tomorrow for Midday. Thanks to The Diz for supplying lunch today for our guests. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends on the web at DizBaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. For all of us on the Midday team, thanks for listening. Happy New Year. Have a great day.